Okay, hopefully we'll go across to Germany now and to King Size Taylor. So let's just say a very good day and welcome to you, Ted.
Thanks very much, Vince. Nice to talk to you.
It is again. I remember our first interview, and you know it was a real pleasure then. And of course, we've kept in touch on Facebook and everything. But it is even better when you've got the man in front of you on the airwaves. So whereabouts are you now?
I'm in Hamburg. Oh. I live in Hamburg now. I have done for the last 5 years. I mean, for me, it was always a dream to live in Hamburg. I fell in love with it in '62. And when I met up with my now wife, Margaret, again, after 39 years, we were both in the position where we got married in 2003. I carried on with my business as a butcher until one day Margaret just said, when I get to 70, I'd like to go back to Germany. So, well, why wait? Let's do it now. And so we just hit the internet, found a property, and now I live here.
Absolutely.
And I love it.
Absolutely wonderful. And, of course, I've got this picture in my mind of a huge guy with a check jacket playing at the Cavern. 6'5", it must have stood you in good stead when you were around the Liverpool scene.
Yes, it always did. And in those days, of course, I was a bit of a hard knock anyway. So... cool down a bit now.
I've read the book. I've read a lot, so I know where you're coming from. But you did actually have to be a little bit that way just to be able to do your job at times, didn't you?
Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure people understand that being a musician isn't all a bed of roses. You know, I mean, for a true musician, it's the ability to play in front of a public that appreciate them. But sometimes you get some hairy moments, of course, because depending on the venue you're playing at, how maybe drunk the crowd are or whatever. And really, in Liverpool, it was a hard city anyway. And, I mean, part of their pleasure was going out and having a scrap, you know. So.
I'm working now at a radio station. It's a venue where we've also got a huge hall and we've got a great band that plays in the hall.
Yeah.
So they have a restro here, you know, like bring and buy and all that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
An auction, and they have all sorts of really good things going on. But the big hall has a big band and they make a big sound. And I think you'd love to come and play here, actually.
Yeah. Well.
Let me
give us a chance.
Yeah. Let me go back to your days around Liverpool. I believe you were around number 6 when the Beatles were number 1 on the Merseybeat poll. Would that be factual?
It is, yeah.
And now, yeah.
I'm not sure. I think we were 7th actually, but it didn't really make any difference because although we played the same circuit, the Beatles at that time had just come back and they had this impression that they brought back from Germany with the black leathers and all that sort of thing. And, of course, when Tony Sheridan got hold of them, I mean, they improved vastly, which was a great thing for them. And Tony, poor Tony, never really gets the credit for what he actually taught the Beatles.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they were ruling the Liverpool roost. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Now, you had a young girl came to sing with your band, and a lot of people don't realise she's probably the biggest star in Britain now, isn't she?
Scylla.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we took her on board as a permanent item. And the only real reason... I mean, everybody said she was my girlfriend. It is a load of bull. That's got nothing to do with it at all. I mean, she was just part of the lads. And funny enough, Bobby, her later husband, Bobby Willis, was actually my road manager for a while.
Right.
And that's how really Bobby and Scylla, I won't say got together because they knew each other anyway through the Cavern days. And he was my road manager for a while, basically because you always made a road manager if somebody had a vehicle that could get you somewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and of course, she wanted to come to Germany with us when we got booked to go to the Star Club in '62. And I refused because, I mean, it was an unknown entity, the Star Club. It's brand spanking new. The area isn't the most desirable, although if you want it, it's there. Nobody pushes it down your throat.
Yeah.
And I'd heard that the likes of some of the girls who had already been over and gone from the top 10 to the Star Club had gone there because they were just females at the end of the day, and I didn't feel that it was the right place for Scylla to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said, we'll go over and try it, and then we'll see what happens. And of course, by the time I got back, bang, she was already up there, you know, so... Mm. And great, I was absolutely delighted, but, you know, you can't have both sausages, can you?
Yeah, now, there's also, I'm remembering things that you've told me, things that are written on the internet, and I want to try and make sure that we get the right story, because you're the man that knows this. When Brian Epstein was getting the Beatles to change from being what they were, rockers, if you like, in the cavern, to becoming these smart four lads with these uniforms and, you know, and London look, if you like.
That's right.
You were very much against this, weren't you?
Well, to me, it was like somebody destroying a band that was doing something they loved. And I'm against that, in a way. It worked for them, great, but it was like selling your soul to the devil, just for the glorification of what not just they get out of it, because I don't personally think that the Beatles particularly liked half the stuff they had to play, in spite of the fact that they write music and this, that and the other. You write stuff that's popular. If you have a hit, great, then you write something else or perform something else down the same line until it's gone, and then you change it and so on and so forth. But I don't think the world ever saw the Beatles as they really were.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It doesn't upset me because it doesn't concern me in a way. But it's like with the recording. I just happened to have them on with this Beatles Live at the Star Club, for instance.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the Beatles, a raw, typical Liverpool kick-ass energy.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what Epi beat out of them.
It's quite funny you're saying this, because I'm involved in trying, you know, I love going and doing a bit of jamming, but of course... when I think back to the songs like Hog for Your Baby, Talking About You, Walking the Dog, all that sort of stuff, I remember the way the Liverpool bands used to play them. And of course, you know, every now and again, you'll come across somebody that does play it in the same way. And it's a real joy to feel the energy that's there, because, you know, they were good numbers, and they were proven, because they all came in as hits very often from the Sailors, weren't they? You know,
yeah,
that brought the record in.
Yeah.
Tell us about, you know, you tried to get Ringo Starr to drum for you. What happened there?
Well, we went, because Dave Lovelady wouldn't come over for the second time to the Star Club with us, obviously, and don't forget Bobby Thompson wasn't with me at this time, the bass player.
Yeah.
I asked Bobby, does he fancy coming? At that time he was working for Rory Storm in Pontins, I think, or Butlins in Pathelli. And I said, we desperately need a drummer, because I took a drummer over that used to go to sleep on the drums, you know. And so I said, he said, well, Ringo's having a bit of problem with Rory at the moment. Perhaps he wants to go. So he said, I'll give you a bell tomorrow. I didn't have a telephone. They had to phone my neighbours, like, you know, because in those days it was like jewellery as telephone, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
And so I get this call back, yes, Ringo will do it. But the same weekend, I didn't know they'd actually done it, but Bobby confirmed that I think it was George and John went to Butlins and asked him outright, and he said, well, how much is Ted going to pay you? And I said, he said, oh, X amount. And he said, oh, we'll give you a five or more per week if you want to come and be our drummer. And so he thought about it, and bang, he was the drummer. Then we had to look for another one, you see. And it's a strange twist of fate, but it was great for Ringo at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's get to what you're doing now over in the Star Club, because this is what caught my eye, and it's something that's going to be... I think you're going to have a great day when all this happens. Tell us what you've planned.
Well, as an old muso, nobody... It's like I say on my website, none of us ever thought we would ever see the 50th anniversary of the Star Club. But as I got older, and even Tony Sheridan admitted this when I was talking to him the other day, that the nearer you get to it, the more confident that you're going to be able to do it. And so about 18 months ago, I started planning it and trying to get this together. And then just all of a sudden, it's just become a waterfall of people throwing in. And it's not for the money, by the way.
No.
The money is crap because we're having to pay so much out that all they're coming for, and this is the gospel truth, everybody on the bill, like Chris Farrow, Nashville Teams, Mike Harrison, Cliff Bennett is now coming,
fabulous.
Howie Casey's coming, the Lords, the Rattles, Donald Marsden, Carl Terry,
Brian
Parrish, Ecky Hoffman, and it's just John Lord and the Tremors, Blackbirds. I mean, these are all original people from the Star Club.
Mm.
And they're coming over just for the party end of it, really, you know.
No, I can understand that, because where we live here, I keep bumping into people, and we do this because we love what happened.
And we
still want to create the sort of ambience that those days were, you know.
Yeah.
It's because it's lovely that you mentioned Beryl Marsden, because we'd earlier mentioned Cilla. And, of course, around Liverpool, around that time, those two were big rivals, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and Beryl, when you see her today, is probably better than she ever was.
Yes.
I mean, I've brought her over to Germany 3 times in the last year, and she's absolutely terrific.
Mm.
She really is amazing.
Well, look, when is this going to... what date have you got actually penned in for this now?
OK, it's all confirmed. It's up and running. It's on all the websites. It's on my Facebook site and all, everywhere. And it's the 12th, which we're going to use as a pre-Star Club birthday show, which will run into the early hours of the morning with a festival and champagne reception for at midnight, when the day actually comes in. And then we run it on the 13th of April, which is the actual birthday of the Star Club, on the same day, everything, same day, same date, which is the 13th of April. And then we have another show and another after-show party, and bang. And I think that is the last great Star Club anniversary that the world will ever see.
I think it sounds absolutely wonderful. And Ted, if you've got any of those people that are going to appear that would like to do a link with me here in Spain, I'll give them some airtime and I'll be delighted to have a chat with them, because I think I knew practically all those people that you mentioned, and it sounds like it's going to be just absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, but the amazing thing, of course, is after I rang Tony Sheridan to see if he wanted to do it, he loved the idea, and I've now got together the complete 1963 star combo. With Tony Sheridan, Roy Young, Ricky Barnes, Colin Molander, and Johnny... Jimmy Doyle.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure the listeners from the Costa Blanca here will know many of those names.
Without a doubt.
And
yeah.
They can go to your website, can't they, Ted?
Of course they can, yeah.
And
yeah.
Obviously, I'll give you a note back onto Facebook later in the day or tomorrow.
Yeah.
And see if we can help in any other way.
That's lovely, Vince.
Ted, it's been absolutely wonderful to speak with you again. I've really, really enjoyed meeting up over the airwaves once again.
Why don't you make some time and come up and see the show?
I'll tell you something, that's already in my mind, because we could even either just fly across or drive across. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful what you can do these days.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And April, I mean, it's going to be a nice time of the year, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
Ted, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Okay, thanks very much, Vince.
All the best to you.
And regards to all your listeners as well.
Thank you, Teddy. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. Ted Taylor there over in Hamburg.
To the world. Big FM.
Now, this is Teddy Taylor, and King Size Taylor as he was with the Dominoes. Talking there with King Size Taylor, all to do with the Star Club Hamburg revival in April.
To the world, Big FM.
Exciting times. If you were there the first time round, you would love to be there for the second time. Time check is 11:33, 96.7 and 92.2 Big FM.
Join the revolution now, Big FM.
What about the workers?
What about the workers indeed?
Time for a bop around the kitchen. It's Kelly Marie and Feel Like I'm In Love.